Oborne and Heller on Cricket, brought to you by the Chiswick Calendar.
Hello, it's Peter Oborne here, and it's starting to rain in Wiltshire.
Hello, it's Richard Heller in southeast London, where it's still a scorching day. Not quite such a few what a scorcher day as yesterday, in English tabloid language, but it's still pretty hot.
You'll be getting the rain later. It always comes from Wiltshire.
Yep.
Now, Richard, you've played cricket, I believe, many times against a hugely distinguished guest. It couldn't be a more timely conversation coming as it does as England is playing the Netherlands at ODI. Perhaps you should introduce, though, our very, very distinguished and welcome guest.
Well, very welcome indeed, and very appropriate Stephen's joining us, as you say, on the day that England are playing a one-day international series in the Netherlands for the very first time. Stephen is a past chairman of the Royal Dutch Cricket Board for over a decade. He still sits on its supervisory board. Stephen has also had a very distinguished career in public service in the Netherlands, and after that with the United Nations. He's a former director of the UN Peace Palace in the Netherlands. He's still a consultant, expert in international law. And I may say he's a very expert umpire. He once gave me an LBW decision, and it means he sees a lot further than many other umpires have done. Stephen, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard. It's a very kind introduction. I don't remember that LBW decision.
I remember them all in my career. They're few and far between. Those in my favour are few and far between.
I also played cricket against Richard at a slightly younger age. And we have this annual battle between the Dutch Parliament and the British Parliament called the Lords and Commons. And our team is not entirely made up of parliamentarians because we simply don't have enough parliamentarians to play the game. So we are collecting people who more or less look like it.
Well, I have to say, Stephen, the Lords and Commons do not always rely on real parliamentarians. Qualifications have sometimes been pretty loose. You know, have you seen Big Ben? Yes. Well, you're in the team. that kind of thing. Stephen, it's a great pleasure to welcome you, but it's slightly double-edged welcoming you on what was a rather hard day for Dutch cricket yesterday, wasn't it?
I was there. I've seen the whole match. It was just unbelievable how quickly England progressed from a good start to an incredible finish. When Butler came in after 30 overs, it was still sort of reasonable score, 200 for two or so, and he he blasted 160 runs, many, many sixes far away and so easily that, yes, it was a hard day in the field. I cannot say anything else. And a great lesson. It was just fantastic batting.
What's amazing about it? It sounds, from the match reports, it sounds like rather a dangerous neighbourhood to be in. Is it a relatively small ground, Stephen? Quite a lot of shots went out of it, certainly.
For our understandings in the Netherlands, this is a pretty big ground. Of course, it's not as big as a nice county ground, but it has good size. But on one part, say over the head, it's not that far, and many of the sixes were hit over the screen onto the street behind or in the bushes. So I think many of the white balls have been lost. The umpire had to run in the field many times with a box with spare balls.
Did anybody get hurt? I mean, obviously, we're walking down the street. It's quite dangerous.
No. This is a path, a footpath behind the cricket field or in between fields. So I don't think anyone got hurt. Yes, but might have been. There were mighty sixes really flying out of the ground a long way.
And you're not bad. I mean, it's not as if the Netherlands are got a rotten team. You've got a very good team. You're going to get into the World Cup.
Yeah. I think we have a decent team. Of course, we vary according to the players who can play. And we have done well, I would say, against the West Indies. That was the previous series with decent results. Yes, we lost, but they were rather competitive games. And we have done well in the past, but this is just something we could not stop at all.
Well, it was really as if the Dutch team put up quite a decent score for a conventional, 50-over match. The English team sort of played a T20 innings right from the beginning, virtually, didn't they? And even got faster.
It became a blast in all qualifications. And they did not slog. They really played very good shots. But, of course, they were loose. There was no danger. There was no risk in getting out, because if someone got out, another one would have come in. And so they just went on. Because this other guy called Livingston, he had 66 runs, I think, in 20 balls or so. And the first opener, Mr. Roy, he was out after one run. And the captain, Morgan, he came in at 300 so much, he was out first ball. So there was some pleasure to be had as well for the Dutch.
Yes.
What sort of following does cricket have? I mean, was this being watched on TV in the Netherlands? How many people?
Well, this is an important question, because we are an old sport, but we don't have the standing of a great sport. So the media coverage is meager. The Dutch television does not put out reports. Of course, the match was televised, and you could see it through a decoder. It's called Via Play. You have to pay, I think, 10 euros a month, and you can see all the sports, including Verstappen in Formula One. So many people have that. But the newspapers, they write a bit about it. But you see, we are a sport of between 5,000 and 6,000 players or members. So we're a small compared to other sports that have far larger numbers. So I cannot explain why this particular series was not picked out by the media in a better way. But anyway, we have to live with what we have. And there's now with these matches, there's good coverage.
Well, that's more encouraging. You mentioned that you have to play with the players that are available to you. And I think the Dutch captain mentioned that three regular English county players weren't available in this for the match yesterday.
Well, that is entirely true. They qualify to play for the Netherlands. They are members of a county team. And I think the rule of the International Cricket Board is that you have a right to call upon them. But then the county will make trouble. And then, for instance, a player may lose his place in the county side. So that doesn't really work. And indeed, we would have been stronger with those players. So that's just too sad that they could not be made available.
Perhaps you could name them, actually, because there is quite a major contingent of Dutch players in the last two or three decades, haven't there, in English cricket?
Yeah. Well, yes, we had a number of our talents played for English counties. And I think at present, one or two are listed by so the guys who have been born in Holland and who are sort of exported to the UK. Of course, we had PJ Bakker, who played for Hampshire. We had Roland Lefebvre. They were very well-known names, I think, in the county cricket. Bas Sardert also played for them. So this is an established way, but of course it doesn't involve many players.
Are there any Dutch players in the national team on central contracts?
Yeah, well, the players get paid a sort of daily fee, and few of the players are on central contracts. I do not know how many are, but it must be in the order of something like half that are on a contract, and the others are just called in and selected, and they play for the national team.
So it's pretty hard to become a Dutch professional player unless you go overseas.
I think that is true. I think there is not really a basis for a professional game in the Netherlands, even though the game has become more professional over the last years. And we have adopted a number of the customs, or what is it, rules of the professional game. We're no longer fully amateurs.
Right. Are any Dutch players in T20 leagues overseas at the moment? I don't remember seeing any in the IPL, but are any...
I don't think... I'm not aware of a Dutch player in the IPL.
I don't think so. I don't think there is one. No. And I wasn't sure there might be... There are other T20 international leagues now. I don't know if there are any Dutch players have managed to make their way into them and make a living out of them. As we said a moment ago, Stephen, Cricket is a very long-established game in the Netherlands. It gets a lot of coverage from our idol, Major Bowen, his great history of cricket, its growth and development throughout the world. He actually suggests, Major Bowen, that cricket has a medieval origin in what has become the Netherlands in the game of krikstoel. I just wondered if the Dutch have ever claimed the invention of cricket.
No, I've never come across any argument that the Dutch had invented cricket. What I came across was that the French had invented it. And I read another story that the Flemish had introduced it in the UK. But it's all far away, and I'm pretty sure that the Dutch would never claim the origin of the game. It was introduced in the Netherlands in the middle of the 19th century. And what I read is that this was done by British teachers in a boys' school, and they started to play there.
Right.
And the club that I'm a member of, you know where that is, in The Hague, dates from 1878. It was one of the first clubs to be really established as a club. I think they played a bit earlier, but the starting date of the club was 1878.
Mm. The Dutch Cricket Association, says Major Bowen, is now the oldest surviving national cricket association. Founded, I think, in 1883, and many of the founder clubs are still members of it, aren't they?
Yeah. The KNCB, that organization that I know well, is from that date. I remember the centenary. It's an association with now, I think, 50 member clubs in that area. And it's doing well. It is the traditional association structure with a board and clubs that control the board.
Mm. Very, very good clubs, which I've enjoyed playing in over the 20 so years of the Binnenhof and parliamentary series. They've always struck me as extremely well run and very, very good facilities.
And like the British, like cricket in England, it's got a royal connection, hasn't it? Just as Prince Philip would play a lot of cricket.
Yeah, well, it had, an incidental royal connection. Of course, the board itself is royal. If an organisation has proven its existence and has a certain time, you can apply for a royal part in your name. And I think that was given to the Dutch Cricket Board some 50 years ago. So we are the Royal Dutch Cricket Association.
And your king's brother, didn't he?
Yeah, and then the king's brother, Friso, he played once in, he played a bit of cricket, and he played in a Binnenhof match. I was there, I remember that very well. He got 38 runs. And we found that the opposition didn't get him out when they wanted him out. So that was a big fun on our side. And he was a very good fielder. And he tragically died after a ski accident in Austria. And that is already, I don't know, some 10 or 15 years ago. And Richard, you must have met him then.
Meet him. I do remember him when he visited. Not sure there were many appeals against his Royal Highness when in the match, but he certainly played very well. I'm not sure how many appeals were entertained anyway.
He seemed to like the bowling, let me put it that way.
He did.
I was there, by the way, in Holland on King's Day in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
My word, what a day. It was an incredible event. Amsterdam turned into one enormous street party with...
Well, that's true. That's what it's known for. And the canals get packed with boats circulating. And that's always... It used to be on 30 April. That was the date of the Queen. But now it's 26 April, I think. It's the anniversary of the King. Yeah. And a big event.
Yeah, so it's completely... I took my wife and I went off to visit the Van Gogh Museum. By shared chance, there we were with... And it was glorious. It was so good-natured, such fun. Yeah. We were so made so welcome.
And all the children have little markets outside. They sell whatever stuff they have. So that is also a great sort of little aspect of that day.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
So I was very glad to see how popular the royal family is, though. I thought that was lovely.
That is certainly true. Yeah. Of course, there is always a bit of debate in this country. But those who criticize the existence of the royal family are in a minority. I don't know how that is in the UK, but I think the royal family is very well established, and we're very happy with them.
Well, not much criticism of the monarchy in Platinum Jubilee year at the moment, though there's some undercurrents. But to go back to the history of Dutch cricket for a moment, the Netherlands had a great colonial empire, of course, for many years, and I just wondered if the Dutch had exported cricket to any part of their empire during the 19th century, as the British did, the East Indies or Suriname or the Antilles or anywhere like that.
The point is, it's not that I know that it was exported. I know a bit was played in Indonesia now, the Dutch Indies at the time. Suriname is still playing, and also good players from Suriname come to Holland to play for Dutch clubs. So I think that that line is more active. And in the Caribbean part, I'm not aware of any cricket being played, but when we played the West Indies only 10 days ago, we were made aware of a player who came from St. Maarten, and St. Maarten is a part of the Dutch kingdom. Mm. But he had various passports, so he would qualify. He did qualify to play for the West Indies. But in answer to your question, I don't think there was any sort of a policy to bring the game abroad. I think it has always been a bit of a struggle to keep the game alive in our own country.
Again, going back, Major Bowen and quite a lot of other sources mentioned the first great Dutch player was Cast Postuma. Tell us a bit about him. First Dutchman to play first-class cricket.
Yeah. He was a great name. He was a very good bowler, and you must have read that he had something like 2,400 wickets. And he played in England. He must famously have played in a match with Dr. Grace. But I'm a bit over-asked to say what type of player he was, because I know he was from Schiedam, which is an important cricket city in the Netherlands. But I don't know really more about him, more than I have in the few lines that I've read.
His bowling average was below 9.
Yeah, it was incredible. He was a fierce bowler.
Do we know what happened when he bowled? Because he was a sort of the epic player of the early history of the Dutch cricket. And what happened when he encountered Dr. Grace? What happened when he bowled at Dr. Grace? Do we know this?
I don't know. But the only thing I know is that he played for the Dutch national team until he was 60. So he was indeed a very strong force in the team. But I must admit that I don't know what happened when he met Dr. Grace, or when he played with Dr. Grace.
I'm willing to bet that Dr. Grace did not walk for him.
Yes, we know that much about Dr. Grace.
Pretty fair guess, even if he was bowled. Stephen, another episode mentioned by Major Bowen, and indeed illustrated by a photograph that I'd just ask about, is the fact that cricket continued in the Netherlands even under the Nazi occupation, as it also did in Denmark. Nazis actually were very, in many other countries, very keen on using sport to sort of promote acquiescence or even support for their occupation. But I just wondered how they'd, if you knew how they'd sort of treated Dutch cricket, cricket being, you know, a sport associated with the English. Was there any sort of feeling that cricket was an act of resistance? Did it have any symbolism in that way?
I know that the cricket competition continued in the early years of the war, say 1940, 1941, 1942. And I think that in that time, still communications were possible. Teams could travel by train and so on to play each other. I've never heard that there was some sort of Nazi element in or policy to use it in any way or other. I only know that the stocks dwindled and that the Dutch Cricket Board suspended the competition in 1944. But that was a very difficult period then of the war, because we were blocked off and hunger was a prime issue. But of course, it's again well before my time. So I'm talking from history books.
It is indeed a historic note. Major Bowen adds the detail that they ran out of cricket balls and painted the stock of hockey balls that they could find, painted them red to carry on for as long as possible.
That's a rather smart way of doing it. A hockey ball has the same size, and has more or less the same hardness. So I could see the logic of that.
Moving forward a little bit, the Netherlands plays a lot of more touring sides visit the Netherlands, and the more Dutch sides go out of the Netherlands after the war. Comes a great result in 1964, isn't it? The Netherlands beat the visiting Australians, the Ashes series, in the Ashes side of 1964, on a visit to Holland in a one innings match, don't they?
Yeah, I can tell you, I was there. I was as a youngster of the club on the stand, and I've seen the match. It was incredible because these players were so much more qualified than the Dutch players, but the Dutch put up a very, very good fight. And I think the players of Australia had seen a bit of the nightlife of Amsterdam the day before. So they may not have been at their best, but I still remember the two sixes that ended the match in favour of the Dutch, and we still talk about it. We have other great events, but the win over Australia in 64 was momentous.
It's similar from your account to the famous Irish victory over the West Indies in 1969, when the Ireland bowled out Gary Sober's team for 25, was it not, Richard?
25, yeah.
25. So what about, take us through this occasion. So you've got Bill Laurie, R.B. Simpson, you've got Walters, you've got McKenzie. What a team, and you beat them. Take us through what happened from the point of view of a young lad watching.
Well, I remember that the Dutch team had one or two quick bowlers. One of them was called Ben Kreisler, and he was genuinely fast. And I think we also had a very good off-spinner, Ernst Frings, who was the man of my club, and a doctor batsman, Peter van Arkel, who were at their best on that day. So we contained Australia to, I don't know how many, but something like 200 runs. And then slowly but surely we build on the total, and in the end, we were just loosening the brakes, and it went our way. But it was, I think, that was a match where we could easily have had 4,000 spectators on the ground that Richard knows, the Hague Cricket Club. By the way, yesterday in Amstelveen we had over 5,000 spectators.
5,000 live spectators.
Yeah,
that's quite a number.
Quite a number, but I must admit, many of them came from the UK. So when we entered the ground, we saw many of your countrymen walking down the street to the ground. But it was a very nice sight. 5,000 people on the stands, and there was huge singing and celebration. So it was a very festive day. Oh, nice. And the one in 64, I remember, it was a rainy day. There was also a break for rain. So it wasn't sure that the match could be continued, but then in the end it was.
It was a one day match, wasn't it? It wasn't a limited overs match.
It was a one day match. It could have been a draw. Yeah. The guy who hit the two final sixes to win the match has written, I think, for 30 years in the Telegraaf, the Dutch newspaper, about cricket. I saw him yesterday. He was Ruud Olsen. He was sort of man of the match, I think. He's from Highland. You know, the cricket in Holland is spread around over a number of cities. The Hague is an important part of that, but Haarlem is, Rotterdam is, Schiedam is, Utrecht is, Deventer is. So it is. It's not spread over all the country, and we always hope and believe that we can keep the strongholds strong.
No, you're whetting my appetite. I think, what about taking a tour? Some people listening to this, in fact,
wonderful
me.
Wonderful place to tour. Couldn't recommend it more highly. Yep.
So the village of Horningsham, which I have the honour to represent in Wiltshire, they do tours, or we do tours. Where should we... Would you recommend us doing that?
Yeah, a tour of a week, four matches, five matches in maybe 8 days would be wonderful. And I think... if you start with contacting the Royal Dutch Cricket Board and ask for a contact with the clubs, I think that is the way to do it. Because in the end, it is the clubs that have to put up a programme.
Of course.
I think.
Because as I recollect, the The beer is, that pale beer you serve is quite delicious too, isn't it?
Yeah. Our beer is cold, whereas your beer is not so cold.
But it's jolly good, is all I know.
but we have this world mark called Heineken, and you'll find it in nearly every pub. And it's highly recommended. It's very nice beer.
It is.
It's a bit cloudier in, it's a lot cloudier though in Holland, in the Netherlands, to use the proper term, than it is in, when marketed in English pubs.
What do you mean by cloudier?
It's sort of paler and cloudier, isn't it, than the...
Well, I think, no, it's clear, it's not cloudy.
Oh, I'm wrong about that.
But it's paler, and there's a lot of froth. Yeah. Yeah, a Dutch beer needs to have froth on top of it. Whereas maybe you would not like to see that froth, but for us, two fingers of froth is an important element of a good beer. And it's indeed pale and cold, and we all like it very much. But you shouldn't, on a warm day like yesterday, it was very important not to overdo your consumption, because it would just hit you on the head.
It's very easy for it to drink itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Stephen, you mentioned some of the Dutch players who played in county cricket. Was county cricket opened up to the best Dutch players by the UK joining the EU? Did that affect qualification? And did it? Has it made a difference? Has Brexit made a difference in the other way? Has it made it harder for Dutch players?
I'm not aware of a break on the possibility for Dutch players to qualify for English counties. If they're good, I think they would be allowed to play for the counties. Maybe the UK has introduced rules now that make it more difficult. But there was, strangely enough, in the time that the UK was with the EU, not an intense communication between the UK. So our two seasons are in the same period. There was, for instance, an intense communication between South Africa and the Netherlands, or Australia and the Netherlands, or New Zealand and the Netherlands. Because for them, it was their winter time, and they could play either as a coach or as a player in Dutch competition. But I'm not aware of many British players in our competition, but I know, of course, there was this, the really good players on Dutch side would like to play for English county cricket.
There was a curious, to me it seems curious, period, wasn't there, in the 90s, when the Netherlands played in the English NatWest knockout competition, which used to be the Gillette, later became the C&G, and so did Scotland, Ireland and Denmark. I must say, you know, looking back on it, that seems like a bit of a colonial arrangement to me, sort of English cricket sort of kind of handing out prizes to deserving other nations. But I just wondered how the Netherlands thought about it.
That is a perspective that I had not really thought of. In my role as cricket administrator, I remember vividly that we applied for the possibility to participate in this competition with the counties. Mm. We started to see ourselves as a Dutch county, and we wanted to compete in a competition that would really bring important matches. So I think we've never seen that in any way or form as a political arrogance. Not at all. We were very happy that we were allowed to participate, and they brought great matches to the Dutch grounds, and we had one or two wins, and that was a big thing.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that, Stephen. Glad it was so well received there. Did it have a good effect on the development of Dutch cricket, that episode? Did it open up participation and encourage people to watch and play?
It helped to maintain the level of interest in the sport. But as I said in the beginning, it's a small sport, and we have a small audience of ourselves. A match against in the NatWest would bring maybe 2,000 spectators to the ground. That would already be a nice crowd. So it did not enhance participation per se. What did enhance participation is the fact that we have many Asian compatriots now, people of Asian descent who live in the Netherlands and work here, and they have a high interest in cricket. So on that side, participation has grown.
It's certainly true, is it not, that it's very fascinating, actually, that German cricket has received an enormous boost from Afghan refugees. And so much so that Germany is kind of, is almost turning into a potential test match nation, if you look ahead.
But I heard a number yesterday, something like the German board now has 200,000 members or so, or that the 200,000 people playing cricket, just enormous. And they're mostly Afghans. And I think they're allowed to play for the German national team. I've understood that the German national team is now a very proper side.
That's so exciting, isn't it? It's that sort of diaspora of cricket, which way it expands in the most unexpected ways. Because if you go back 25 years, you know, the Netherlands was one of the top teams in the world outside the Test Match nations. And you've sort of been overtaken first by Afghanistan and now by the what you might call the Afghan diaspora, i.e. Germany.
Well, fortunately, we're not yet there as far as Germany is concerned, but it's absolutely true. I remember that in an ICC trophy that was the qualifying round for the World Cup, the Dutch had to play, I think, for a top spot against Bangladesh. That was then a developing nation. And Bangladesh now has, I think, either test status or ODI status. They're way ahead of us.
Test status, very
and,
much
and
so.
We have been overtaken by, I think, Scotland and Ireland. So we're sort of maybe still in the main league, but I found Ireland very strong. And also I think the game has really grown in Ireland and also in Scotland. That's I think, where we lag behind. So that, it's absolutely true what you say. Afghanistan, I don't know. I think they have a recognised ODI status, but not yet a test status.
No, they're playing test. They're a test nation now.
Are they officially a test nation?
They are. They have played a few tests, and they are a test nation, and they get a share of the international revenues.
And I know from my experience that those shares can be very interesting, because that is the television money that goes into a major tournament and then is split up first amongst the test nations, and then what remains is going to the others. No, but that's true. I think the remark is spot on that we have not certainly not stood still, but others have made greater strides.
A lot of concern in England and indeed other countries about the extent to which cricket's becoming almost a niche sport for the, you know, for quite well-to-do people and sort of more prosperous areas of the country. Has that been an issue in the Netherlands at all, Stephen? And has the board over the years tried to address it? And has it tried to grow the game in inner cities and with disadvantaged populations? And has it had any success?
Yeah, well, we always had to fight the image that cricket is an elitist sport. You see, it's people in white and they're in nice grounds and clubhouses. And indeed, it's seen by many as a small and therefore elitist sport. And we could always counter that by saying, well, it's played where it's played. It's not necessarily an elitist sport. There were soccer clubs that played cricket in the summer. But you cannot negate the fact that it is a small sport. But especially the influx of the Asian people has made that the argument of elitist sport has dwindled away. You don't hear that so often anymore. But they would call golf an elitist sport, and until recently, the tennis was called an elitist sport. It's a sort of framing in the press that you cannot walk away from.
How much cricket is available to school children in the Netherlands? Do schools play it? State schools?
Schools do not play it. We do not have this system of school sports as much as in England. School children play cricket because they are a member of a club. And say you become member at 9 of a soccer club, and then in the summer they start playing cricket and then soccer again. That's how you breed new cricket players. And then you can draw on rather large numbers who want to play soccer. The same was true for hockey, but hockey is going on for such a long time into the summer period that it's hardly impossible to have any decent players coming from the hockey world. But they will play until the end of June or so. And they will, so that has dried up. And some clubs do very well of their own because they attract, for instance, in Amsterdam, there are several clubs who draw heavily on the expats and have their own members as well, or their original members. But yeah, it is a bit of a struggle not to keep the sport alive, but to try to grow. And if you say schools, we would all love that cricket would be played in schools. And I remember in my school, we did a bit of that, but it has never been an institution.
Interesting. Yeah. Stephen, you've represented the Netherlands in international cricket business, and I think you have quite a lot of experience with the ICC, and also sort of you've seen how other cricket administrations work. Just wondered sort of what you'd learned from that experience and what, particularly from other countries.
I have been the representative of the Dutch Cricket Board in meetings of the ICC, and we have met many of their people. We were very close with the ECB in the time that Tim Lamb was their chief executive. And we had a very fruitful cooperation with them. I remember that we were in those meetings and we could very well participate in the meetings and on the issues that were at stake. But of course, we didn't have this invisible factor of being a test nation. So when it came down to distributing money or dividing important jobs, I cannot say we were overlooked, but we're certainly on the second rank. But by the way, my successor in the KNCB is called René van Ierschot. He managed to obtain a seat in the executive committee of the ICC. So he's built on that and done extremely well. So yes, I think you could say you learn from participating in those meetings and talking to the top administrators of other countries.
I mean, the criticism of the ICC, and I never know how fair it is, it does take you into deep waters, which you may not want to involve yourself in, particularly as an associate nation, is what you are, is it not? That the ICC has become a vehicle for big money, and in particular India, and it's subordinating other issues to that money agenda. Do you have any observations about how it could be better run?
I would have one observation, which I think I can freely make, and that is that it's not that the money dominates so much, because the money is so important for each and every country, because they run their whole system on the basis of the income from the ICC. So it's only logical that it takes a prime position. But the fact that I think there are now three nations in the ICC that sort of between them define the polity: India, England, and Australia. This is, as far as I know, is an important element of today's administration. That feels like highly criticizable because it takes away the rights and interests of others. And of course, they say, "Yeah, well, we make all of the money." So, but I've not been part in that debate. I once met in my work in The Hague, Lord Wolf, who had just done a report for the ICC. I remember that I discussed with him, and that he also was very critical of that limitation of the power in the hands of a few. If I would criticize the system, there's too much power in the hands of a few nations.
Stephen, it's been a joy talking to you and hearing about the history and the present state of Dutch cricket. Will you be watching the rest of the ODI series?
Yeah, I'll be there tomorrow when we expect even more people to sit on the stands. And there's another match on Wednesday. But as I was involved in the organisation of these matches, I felt I should also watch them. So I'll be there, yeah.
Perhaps it's in order for us to wish better fortunes to the Dutch team in the next two ones.
It sounds also certainly like we hope, you're safe in the stands.
My goodness, they were just incredible.
Quite a few Dutch sixes hits, I was told. Yes, yeah.
It will be a joy tomorrow, I'm sure, on the Sunday and with all those people. So and maybe we should just decide not to field first, but to bat first, and then see how things develop.
Well, I tell you what, something's happened to the England cricket team since the appointment of a certain Ben Stokes as captain. Yeah. It's just, and McCullum, the great the New Zealand coach.
Yeah.
I think there's a new attitude, and I think you're just unlucky to run into it.
Yeah, you will. Anyway, I wish you a two very, very pleasant matches.
Thank you to
watch.
And we'll see each other next week.
And we will see each other next week for the Binnenhof visit. We look forward to that.
This is the British Parliament against the Netherlands Parliament next week.
The Netherlands Parliament, the team that plays under the banner of the Dutch Parliament. Yeah.
Oh yeah, well that's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Very long running international series.
Who is the favourite, Stephen, next week?
Next week, well, we had our good periods, and then I think Richard's team had the good periods. I would say at present, I would put my money on the British.
Who is the best British parliamentarian you've ever played against in your long history?
On the Dutch side, we had for a long time, we had Buster Gij Fredman. Mm. Buster Gij Fredman was, he played with us and he bowled occasionally. He was very fond of the game, and he was a very well-known Dutch parliamentarian, left of centre or left of centre. He was a radical politician.
On the British side, the matches were sort of dominated, at least for a long time, weren't they, by Michael Mates and Michael Cox.
Yeah. Good Lord. So Michael Mates was a wicketkeeper batsman. He was a Northern Ireland minister. He organized the losing campaign of Willie Whitelaw in 1975. He was a great, great figure in Parliament. Michael Cox was the brutal chief whip who kept the Callaghan government in power in the back end of the 1970s. He was a thug.
He loved cricket.
And he did fantastic speeches at the occasion.
I bet he did.
And he hated Tony Benn. So each of the occasions was always half dominated by his anger about Tony Benn.
Yes, he wasn't fond of the Labour left.
He was a Bristol MP, and he famously managed to manoeuvre Tony Benn out of his seat when it was redistributed and keep it for himself. So there's no love lost between them. Michael Cox is the hero of the famous story when Harold Wilson was then Prime Minister and rang him up and tried to reach him at a cricket match, and they said, he's just gone into bat, and Harold Wilson said, well, I'll hang on then.
Who is the best player next week's encounter, or the best parliamentarian, we should say, at next week's event, Richard?
Michael Tomlinson. He's a youngish Conservative MP. He's now, I think, secretary of the club. And I hope Henry Bellingham will be playing again. I hope he's not...
he's a Lord now, right?
Lord Bellingham, as he's now, indeed, you're right. Lord Bellingham was a great stalwart of the fixture for a very long time.
Yeah.
As was Crispin Blunt.
I played against Crispin Blunt. I remember we discussed the European Union on a boat on the lake. He was very much against the European Union, I remember, from that time. But he was a very good player. I think he scored when we had an important match in this historic ground. He got 100 so easily.
He was a very good batsman. I've known Crispin for about more than 40 years. When he was a young army officer, he once was based at Tidworth. And he told me he played 40 games of cricket while commanding his platoon or whatever it was, one summer. So he's obviously kept busy by the army. He's standing down at the next election.
Yes,
Crispin is.
Stephen, once again, great joy to talk to you, and hope you enjoy the next two matches in the ODI series and the annual grudge fixture of the two parliaments the following week.
The following week. We'll see you in London, Richard.
Look forward to that.
Thank you, Peter.
It's such fun to meet you, Stephen. Yeah. I really enjoyed that conversation. And it's goodbye from me, Peter Oborne, in a still wet and overcast and windy Wiltshire.
Goodbye from me, Richard Heller. It's still warm and quite sunny here in southeast London.